CliffCentral.com. Frequency. It is just after 10 past 7. You know, a couple of seconds off. Thank you very much. What are you doing this weekend? Anybody doing anything fun?
Yeah, playing golf tomorrow morning.
No. I said, anybody doing anything fun?
I'm so excited about this. Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm so excited.
What are you doing?
I'm so excited. My home golf course is preparing for a European tour event. So they're growing the rough out. It's going to be so amazing.
Yeah. All right.
Your home golf course.
Yeah. So Royal Joburg, they host the Joburg Open. So the East course in particular is one of the best courses in the country. And I'll be there with friends. It's going to be amazing.
Because they've got two different courses, right?
Yeah. The East and the West course.
If you look at a satellite picture of Joburg, it's probably the biggest green space in Johannesburg.
It's like the lung of Joburg. Yeah. Towards the Linksfield area.
Mm-hmm. That's very pretty.
Do you really dress up for golf?
Oh, yeah, you must see Ben dress up for golf.
I'm sponsored by a leading golf brand. Of course, you're damn right. I have a room.
Drops my.
I have a room with golf outfits.
Can you honestly be like turned away at a golf course if you aren't dressed to standard?
Yeah. No, there's a general dress code. It's not quite as strict as it used to be, but it's pretty much you have to dress in golf attire.
So what is the dress code? I mean, what are the rules?
Well, you got to wear a collared shirt.
Okay.
And you got to wear decent pants, not elasticated stonewashed jeans. For instance, if you're going to wear shorts, socks, they shouldn't be ridiculous. Some courses don't let you play in socks that aren't white.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
You can't wear the secret socks.
Hmm.
Yeah, it could vary from course to course, but essentially just like golf's great. Make sure you look good while you do it.
Do you have a caddy?
No, I don't like caddies. A lot of the time, they're just very sour people. And I know it's maybe a socioeconomic thing, but no matter how much you give them at the end, they'll give you this long face. A lot of the time, they've got flu.
Yeah, because they're standing out in the sun all day.
Which is fine. I mean, I can get that. But then, you know, they're touching, like, your towel, and they're just coughing on it.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't like a lot of people in my personal space.
Okay. Yeah.
Plus, it's a bit of a workout if you carry your own bag.
No, he doesn't like people, period. But yeah. I get that, because that's where him and I have come in.
Yeah. The two of you. No caddies. No,
no people in
look,
general.
Look, it's nice for someone to wash your ball through the round, but you know, you eventually.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, this time you were quite wet, right?
I don't think that is.
You get stuff on your balls.
So how does Daniela feel about caddies washing your balls, Ben?
She's okay with it. She knows what golf's about. And then afterwards you get hammered with your friends. It's such a good day out. Well, hammered to a certain degree. Now you've got stuff to do. You don't get as hammered.
So wait, the basic role of a caddy is to carry your bag, right?
Carry your bag, find it when you hit it skew, and then on the greens itself, they tell you the ball's going to swing from the right or from the left.
Because they know the green better than you do.
How the ball's going to break.
Oh,
and obviously keep your clubs clean, keep your balls clean. And if there's any advice, like, you know, how far away is that bunker? Should I hit this club or that club?
Oh, that so you kind actually of stuff. Need to know technical
stuff. Yeah, it is. Look, it's quite a hard job. And obviously they're carrying your bag for 5 hours.
Wasn't a caddy one of the biggest earners in sport for many years up to now?
Well, the highest earning caddy, this is from last year, earned $1.57 million.
Rory McIlroy's caddy, right?
Billy Horschel.
Okay, Billy Horschel is a golfer.
Yeah. He's Billy's caddy.
Really?
And then secondly, JP Fitzgerald, who's Rory's caddy, he earned $1.48 million. So I thought, like, if you're earning that much for just carrying a bag, that would be awesome. But you have to give advice. Sorry, I can't
do that.
But
you see, that's why they're probably grumpy, Ben, is because they would preferably be caddying. They would much rather be caddying for, like, a Rory McIlroy
than Ben Karpinski.
No offense, because, you know, that's...
Well, exactly.
Because you're not making them all this money.
Exactly.
That's probably why they're
miserable. You could also be sitting on your ass outside, not getting anything, and you get lunch. These guys get a decent enough deal, right? And it's like you pulled this guy and said, look, you will carry my bag. It's a form of income. But they're very, very unhappy people.
Listen, there are lots of surly, miserable people in the world. And I don't know that you can exact satisfaction out of people, but if you don't use them, you don't have to worry about that. So
that's just it. Like, I just don't use them. That's my personal choice.
There's nothing worse to me than someone who goes, oh, the cashier just didn't even smile once. As if a smile is what you deserve because you're a grumpy person who's unloading your vegetables on the counter. But at the same time, if you don't need to engage in that kind of thing, you don't need to let other people determine your own level of satisfaction or dissatisfaction.
Also, just stop being needy.
Yeah. Yeah, not everybody's not everybody's there to make your
Nobody
day.
Nobody owes you anything ever. Stop it.
Stop.
What a great Friday mood.
No worries. All my bad is
Humans are horrible. Stop being needy.
I'm getting a psychologist for the show. You know that.
Oh, man. Are we going to be psychoanalyzed?
We need more than 3 hours for that.
Oh, I'm about to say, the show's going to go from 6 to 11 all of a sudden.
I'm getting us a resident psychologist. By the way, if you want to get hold of us this morning, as with every other morning, you can WhatsApp us on 0797482090. That's 0797482090. You can also get hold of us on WeChat, which many people do. Michelle says, I have to brag. No, humbly. Yesterday, I did a private tour for Tracy Morgan and his wife and kid at the aquarium. What a great and humble guy.
Wait, hold up. Tracy Morgan's in the country.
Yeah. Nice one, Michelle. Good
for
you.
Michelle in Cape Town.
Ramon says, I can't believe Ben didn't mention Gary Player's anniversary in the sport.
Well, it's a personal thing, and we also spoke about it, you know, the renewing of the vows already.
With Viv.
Yeah, with Viv. It's been Viv 60 years.
Viv and Gare. Yes, good morning on Skype. Hello.
How's it, Gareth? Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you, man?
Yeah, lekker, man.
Who's this?
This is Ryan from London.
What's up, Ryan?
Just calling to say hi. My girlfriend and I just watched a movie now in London after my shift of work.
Yeah.
It was a live Woody Harrelson movie. Started at 2 a.m. and we just got home now. It's 5:20 a.m. and we're about to go to sleep.
Damn.
And normally I'd be getting up to work to ride my bike to work. That's when I normally listen to you guys. But at the moment, I'm just got into bed.
So you can go to a movie at 2 a.m. and there are cinemas open.
It was a special film. They shot this movie live. It's called Lost in London. It's Woody Harrelson's movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they streamed it live to the States, and it was 2 a.m. our time. And they shot it live in London.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man. Oh, so you actually saw the filming of the movie. You didn't go to see a movie.
No, it was like seeing a movie. So we sat in the cinema and we waited for it to go live.
Oh,
and it went live.
Okay, you didn't explain that very well, so I was completely confused. Sorry.
Right.
I was they're sitting in a cinema, then I thought you're watching them filming it in the street. Now I get it.
Yeah, it was a one-shot, one-camera movie. It was live, and it was like a first-off thing.
Was Woody Harrelson high?
There was a lot of mention of him being high in the movie and in the pre-shots.
I believe you.
Wasn't there a bomb situation or a bomb scare in London recently, though?
Yes, so they found some World War ordnance or something near Waterloo Bridge, and they actually needed that bridge for the movie, so he thought it wouldn't happen, but it did.
But nothing went off, right?
No, I think they just moved it. They had a naval ship go under the bridge and move it out.
Survived. That's a good thing. You survived.
Good. Yeah, for sure. Anyways, guys, I just want to say thanks for the show. Normally, I catch the first half an hour of your show every day riding to work, and I'm riding back from work, and it's normally
go and get some sleep. It sounds like it sounds like you guys had a long night.
Yeah, it was good.
All right,
good
buddy.
Day, man.
Thanks, man.
Catch you later. Cool, thanks, dude. You guys. Bye. Cheers, team.
There we go. Very good. All right, in the next couple of minutes, we'll speak to Brooks Spector about what's going on in America, the inauguration of Donald Trump, and plenty of other stuff. Mubs, what is in the news that we need to know about?
Well, some 900,000 people, Gareth, both Trump backers and opponents, are expected to flood Washington today for the inauguration ceremony. This is according to organizers' estimates. Events include the swearing-in ceremony on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. And then there will be a parade to the White House along streets, that will be lined by spectators.
Hopefully.
Well, there will be Trump supporters there. I mean, the man won. They are bound to be supporters. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the night before the inauguration, because a bunch of celebrities, they decided to get together on the eve of the inauguration for their own little form of a demonstration.
March.
This includes people like Robert De Niro, Sally Field.
Ah, Bob, he's back again.
Who else was there? There was Rosie Perez, Marissa Tomei, Alec Baldwin, because he's Trump.
I know Chelsea Handler
on SNL.
As well.
So basically all the people in Hollywood you really want to avoid.
So basically, they joined the mayors of New York and Minneapolis to rally cities to chart their own course on healthcare, climate change, and other issues during Trump's administration. Are they legally allowed to do that? Are you allowed to just, you know, start doing your own thing outside of what the government stipulates?
Oh, it's a free country. I suppose you could do what you like. Imagine you're out in Washington, you're a tourist, and Sally Field comes and spoils your day. Can you imagine any more frustrating? I mean, Sally Field, Forrest Gump's mother. Jesus.
Why didn't they do this before the elections? Like, now it's just senseless.
No, the timing of it was important, Sia. So it had to be on the eve of the inauguration. Otherwise, it doesn't get the, you know, desired news coverage.
Exactly. Because they're all attention-seeking whores, really. If they really wanted to change the climate and healthcare and stuff, yeah, they would have done it earlier.
Yeah, but let's do it now. They act in movies for a living. That's not a real job. On the line is Brooke Spector, whom we've often relied on for an inside-outside view of America. It's probably the only way to put it. Brooks is able to talk to us this morning about some of the things around Donald Trump, which I think many of us are asking, and also around the inauguration. Brooks, good morning. It's nice to talk to you again. How are you? Hello, Brooks. Is he there? Lucas?
Oh.
Brooks Spector, good morning. No, I can't
hear
him.
Why can we hear him next door?
I can hear him talking to you, Lucas. For some reason, he's not coming through to me. There we go. Brooks, can you hear us?
It's a bad line.
Oh. No, I'm going to figure this out first. I can't. I'm not going to fuck around.
It just sounds like a bad line.
Yeah, let's try and figure it out. All right, back to you, Mubs.
Oh, okay.
Well, here's something. Sticking to the inauguration.
Fucking technology.
Sticking with the inauguration news, though. And this, let's just all just have a what the hell moment together. Some of Donald Trump's advisors are actually suggesting that at least one dance at his inauguration should be safe for Caitlyn Jenner.
What?
They want Trump ridiculous. And Caitlyn Jenner to have a dance.
Well,
I actually think he should do
it. Caitlyn Jenner is famously
grab her by the what's he got again?
Yes. She got? Caitlyn Jenner is a famous Republican.
Yeah.
And she was quoted as saying that it was easy to come out as trans. It was hard to come out as Republican. And she is actually in Washington for the inauguration. She is a supporter. Mm. And she has said that, like, for example, the Democratic Party handles LGBTQ issues better, but she still does absolutely support Republicans. And so that is why they should dance together.
I don't care what you think, I'm fine. I look so goddamn divine. Hey, internet, look my way. I got on Twitter today. The whole world followed my name. You hear about baby Kanye, but Kim, you're in my way. Your tweets so consoling. Red dress, Porsches rolling. Hot spit all unfolding. Now you think I'm trending, baby. Hey, I just met you, and this just came in. But here's my cover, so call me Caitlyn. It's hard to look away.
Well, there's Caitlyn Jenner. I can't believe Caitlyn Jenner is a Republican. There's a lot about Caitlyn Jenner I can't believe. There's a lot about Caitlyn Jenner I don't understand.
It's just so stupid.
You got someone here who's asking for rights for LGBTI people but doesn't want them to be able to get married. It's very bizarre.
So Trump's advisors are saying, you know, the image of Trump dancing with Caitlyn would send a strong message that he supports gay rights and trans rights because a picture is worth a thousand tweets. And we all consecutively and collectively say, what the hell?
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
It's ridiculous. This is from the lady in Caitlyn's case, who still, you know, defines marriage just as like a union of one man and one woman. Mm-hmm. She does, like, it's just stupid. And now they believe just pairing Caitlyn and Trump together, we're all just going to go, yay, this is awesome. We love Trump now. Please.
We're struggling to get hold of Brooks, but it's not his fault. It's our fault. There's something wrong with our Skype system this morning. I mean, it was fine when people call in, but apparently we're having trouble calling out. So if we can get hold of him, we'll get hold of him. Otherwise, just moveon.org.
So there is a woman in the United States who has now ended up being homeless because she insists that the song Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson was written about her.
Oh, let's, her name is Annie.
Yes.
I knew it. Annie, are you okay?
Her name is Annie and she appeared on Dr. Phil's show.
Yeah.
She is a former model and a mother of three children. And she has actually ended up becoming homeless because she refuses to give up on her quest to prove that the song is about her. She refuses to work because she says that she should be entitled to compensation.
For the song.
For the song, because the song is about her,
You know, there are people in this world who really think that they're owed something by the rest of us. Get out there and work. And if you are... Smooth Criminal was written about you. And are you okay? Why didn't Michael give you money if he was so concerned for your well-being?
Now, Annie says that she was in a domestically violent relationship at the time the song was released. And she says, I believe I am Annie from Michael Jackson's song Smooth Criminal.
Oh, so yeah. She doesn't even know Michael?
No. You believe, but you have no way. This is what people think. People go, because I believe something, it's true. As opposed to... Something is true, and then you choose to believe it or not afterwards.
But that's what the cheap drugs do, though, Gareth.
Yeah, the cheap drugs do that.
See, when you're on the expensive drugs, eventually you go, no, I'm kidding. But in the cheap ones, it's like, oh my gosh, it's ingrained in my brain now.
She recounted the story of an incident that happened where one night she was struck down by her partner, her abusive partner, before she ran into a bedroom. And she says that when all of this was happening, I saw a limousine outside the window, and I believe it could have been Michael Jackson in that limousine. I know that Michael Jackson had family that lived in there. Annie, are you okay? Why do you think he said that? Because he wanted to know if I was okay.
How does Michael even know your name, Annie? Oh, baby girl.
Annie, are you okay?
Now, this is what I also don't get. So she says she... does not work because she spends her time trying to fight this case something along those lines.
She says she refuses to work because she should be entitled to the compensation.
Since 1987, honey. That was when the song was released.
That's horrendous.
Since 1987. I'm pretty certain even if she did receive some sort of cut, that money would have lasted that much.
She's an idiot.
There
was a Billie Jean as well.
Yes, there was.
All these people come out of the woodwork when Michael's dead. He's not here to argue.
I think with Billie Jean, it was a guy who came up and said that he is Michael's son. Because, in the song he says, but the kid is not my son.
And he says, I'm that son.
Yes.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Everybody wants a piece of Michael. Leave the guy alone. He's dead.
Now I'm looking, we need to look for Ben. Huh? Michael has a song named Ben.
I know, it's about a rat though, so that's why I didn't press charges. I realized quite quickly it's about a rat.
True.
Not about me. Shucks. Also, I wasn't born there, but I wasn't going to let that get in the way either.
The next thing you're going to have, you're going to have someone come up and say that Remember the Time was about when they passed Michael Jackson in a shopping mall. You know, I want my piece of the action because he wrote Remember the Time about when I walked past him.
I think Circle of Life is about me, you know.
Of course.
Can you imagine
in Africa.
Imagine Stephen King going, Thriller was all about me. I want everything.
Everyone's taking a chance.
Is there any song with your name in it? Like, no, we should cash it right now.
I don't think anyone's written a song about Gareth.
Are you kidding?
Mariah Carey wrote a song about me.
Yes, Touch My Valley.
Yeah.
Which is actually very personal, and you should have tried to get some compensation.
As did R. Kelly.
And
my mind's telling me no, but my body is telling me yes. I should be rich at this point.
And you should have some sort of sexual restraining order.
Why don't you have all this money? Because then you could take us all on holiday.
Because
that would be nice.
Difficult in South Africa to sue, you know, the rich and famous.
But also, what if...
I just want to find the Mabali song quickly.
I just never realized you guys were that tight.
Oh yeah, Mariah wrote this all about her.
If just a camera up and hit and I best like I just look on YouTube.
off and brag about the secret rendezvous. I will hunt you down. Cause baby, I'm open my business like a Wendy interview. This is private to you and I. Touch my body. Hey,
touch my body.
See, we weren't making it up.
But what if you actually did have love in the club with Usher? Are you then, you must be entitled to something.
Oh,
actually,
and you know what? That's very likely.
Yeah.
That is very likely.
Because, I mean, he was having sex in the club all the time back in the day, did Usher.
And a club is dark, so anyone can actually fake it.
It's late, people are drinking.
Exactly. He doesn't remember much.
It's a very good point. Now, what we're all going to have to do is go through every song in the history of music, find a reason that we could put ourselves into that song, and do what this woman's trying to do to Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Get some money out of them. Right?
We are the world, after all. We can all claim rights from that
we
song.
We should all claim for we are the world. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you can totally sue Bob Geldof if you're in Africa and you did know it was Christmas. Right. So, yeah, I did, dickhead. Some money.
Brooks Spector settled in Johannesburg after a career as a U.S. diplomat in Africa and East Asia. He's taught at the University of Witwatersrand, has been a consultant for an international NGO, has run a theater, been a commentator for South African and international print and broadcast, as well as online media. And he joins us now to talk about Donald Trump. Brooks Spector, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Gareth. I was tempted to sit here in my bathrobe and pajamas looking all bedraggled. But then I realized this is radio.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that we couldn't get hold of you earlier, but I did want to talk to you about the events that will take place later on today. Donald Trump inaugurated as the 45th U.S. president. This is quite a big deal.
Well, for him, it certainly is. For the rest of us, it's, you know, it's one of those troublesome events we're just going to have to live through. grit your teeth, you know, dig your fingernails in and hold on.
Right.
No, I mean, all right, noon in Washington, he'll say the oath of office. It's about 35, 38 words long, depending on whether you count the little bitty words. And he'll give his inaugural address. They say it'll be about 20 minutes long, in which he will do one of two things. He'll continue to chastise and ridicule his opposition, or he will be magnanimous and try to explain that he's president for the whole country. You get to pick your bet on that one. Then there'll be a parade back to the White House. Well, he'll actually go there first. There'll be a parade. In the meantime, Barack Obama will have left Washington by way of the presidential helicopter and then Air Force One, which gets renumbered because the president's no longer on it. He goes away. Donald Trump goes into the Oval Office, looks around and says, "Oh my God, what have I done?"
Now, do you think that he is going to go into the office and say, "Oh my God, what I've done"? He seems to have assembled a team of people around him. A lot of people are criticizing his choices in terms of who's on that team. But I think it's clear that he feels he has a plan. Do you think he completely grasps the enormity of the situation? I mean, he's run big companies before, but this is the most complicated company that there is on earth to run.
Yeah, the curious thing, Gareth, is that he's run a big company with a very small handful of people because it's always been run like a very large version of a family grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, him, his immediate family, a couple of trusted advisors, and then hired guns whenever necessary for the inevitable lawsuits or accounting problems that he's had over the years. This is different, and all of his senior people, the members of the cabinet, they have to go through these confirmation hearings in the Senate. Not one of them has been confirmed. So he'll go into the office, and the only people who will be there and the only people who will have now grasped hold of the government as the new administration will be his immediate staff. Everybody else will be the career civil servants who were there before, who are filling in at the uppermost levels, and a few people who were political appointees that he has asked to hang on from the Obama administration until he gets his own ducks in order. But it's going to be, you know, he's going to look around and he's going to say, do this and do that, and nothing will happen immediately because every single thing that he wants to do that talks to money or changing law or regulations requires congressional approval. And yeah, the Republicans own the Congress, but there's no such thing as a totally united Republican Party. There are people who want to spend money on stuff, and there are people who want to cut the budget back. There are people who want to go with his idea, whatever it may be, on health care. And then there are people who want to cut back on Obamacare. And so it's not going to be the immediate, you know, when you have a parliamentary democracy, Britain, South Africa, generally Canada, the party that comes in has people who immediately just step in as the new cabinet members, because they've already been the shadow cabinet. And they tell their members of the party to pass this or that bit of legislation, and by and large, they do. Here, it's going to be a whole lot more argument, a whole lot more disconcerting, and Donald Trump's going to spend a lot of time scratching his head trying to figure out how to make it all happen.
Now, it's interesting. I saw a tweet from one of the Obama staffers this morning who said that they've taken down all his, you know, more personal effects and pictures out of the White House, and the Oval Office looks a little bare and barren, and that it feels like it's a deserted place at the moment. So when Trump moves in, no doubt he will bring his own style to the actual place. But in terms of the way he administers things, he'll bring a different style of leadership into the White House too. Do we have any clues based on the way that he's behaved on television as a celebrity, or in terms of his own running of his business, as to how he's going to handle complicated things like CIA briefings and situations in the Situation Room when there are international conflicts brewing and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, you know, you got all kinds of schools of thought on this, and it's all I've done is try to listen to people or read about it or converse with others. And, you know, there's one bunch of people that says he's going to be a CEO president. He's going to delegate down ruthlessly and let the various members of staff and cabinet take on all the difficult bits and pieces and do the thing. But one of his predecessors, and it's too early in the morning to remember which one, said, look, there are no simple decisions that reach the president. They get to you because they are difficult and people haven't been able to agree on them. And that's why they get to you. otherwise, they would have been dealt with 20 layers down and been done with. And they don't, you know, it's not should you do this thing or that thing. It's should you face this way, or should you go in an entirely different direction, or should you simply just put it off till later? I mean, not everything requires that you do something. Some things require that you don't do anything. But if you, you know, if you've watched the snarls over these CIA briefings, he's picked a fight with the entire intelligence community. He keeps sending out his tweets and puts the word intelligence in quotation marks, which, well, I mean, you know, I've met a lot of, met some people in the CIA over the years, and I'm not totally in disagreement with that question, but I mean, somebody's got, you know, like, oh dear, you know, really, you think, huh? But on the other hand, they are the people, the institutionally, and there are, you know, thousands of people who work as analysts rather than, you know, the Sean Connery lookalikes. He's going to rely on them for information, for judgments, for analysis, for the analytics of what something means. Is North Korea ready to launch an ICBM test missile, or is it not ready? Has it managed to weaponize, that is, to make it much smaller and fit on a missile, a nuclear device? Can it marry that up with this missile that it can or cannot launch? Is Russia preparing a disinformation campaign against Angela Merkel or not? And if so, whose business is it to deal with it, and so forth? He's going to rely on those people for all of this, and they are now predisposed to grit their teeth when they have to talk to him or have to provide information and feel that that their information is being listened to, appreciated, and understood. The civil service will do its job generally throughout the government, but it's not entirely clear that they're going to do everything he says instantly. There's an old story when Harry Truman, who was president in the late 1940s and early 1950s, he was succeeded by Dwight Eisenhower, who, of course, had been the commanding general of the Allied forces in World War II in Europe. Mm-hmm. And Truman is reported to have told one of his aides that morning of the transition, he said, poor Ike, he's going to come in here and he's going to say, do this and do that after a lifetime of being in the army, and absolutely nothing is going to happen.
You know, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, when it comes to things like foreign policy, people are speculating about what it might be that Donald Trump does. But, you know, you had isolationists before. You had people who were very much hands-off, who didn't want intervention in international affairs. Then you had presidents who were very much involved in international affairs and put America front and center on continents that they had no presence necessarily and in places that they really didn't need to be. Do you think Donald Trump is going to be one of those kinds of Republicans that wants less, the Rand Paul, Ron Paul type Republicans that wants less to do with the international community, or one of those who wants more to do with it?
You know, that's a real interesting question, Gareth. And I mean, you know, people have been tossing this one back and forth now for a while. And yes, there's going to be some kind of a turn inward to the domestic concerns. I mean, he's made this enormous fuss about a rebuilding of national infrastructure, railroads, bridges, harbors, airports, bus terminals, you know, who knows what. And that's going to cost a boatload of money to do it, even if you convince the private sector to participate in it. By the same token, what he's done is he's also said that job number two, I guess, is renegotiating trade arrangements with all the nations around the world that have been stealing America's fortunes.
Yes.
And that doesn't sound isolationist at all. It sounds enormously the opposite, but in very transactional kinds of terms.
Mm.
Okay, you want us to do this? Well, by golly, here's the deal.
Right.
But that's very different than the kind, I don't want to call it altruistic either, but that's very different than the internationalist pitch that's really been true since the late 1940s, that there is a certain responsibility on the world's primary superpower and world policeman, and that if it costs money to do this kind of thing, well, then so be it. I mean, you just have to flip back to John Kennedy. Everybody loves John Kennedy now, but in his inaugural address, he said, "We'll bear any burden, pay any price." You couldn't get away with that now, could you?
Hell no. People don't want to be told what's good for them. They want to hear things they want to hear.
Well, it's our attention span has shrunk down a little bit too. You know, if you don't hear about it in 3 seconds, you figure it's too late. If things don't get fixed in an afternoon, there's something wrong. If stuff doesn't get done properly for you in a heartbeat, you know, what are they waiting for?
And even that line, you mentioned John Kennedy, but where he said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." I think people would laugh you off the stage in 2017 if you said that. People look at the government as being something that works for them and where they expect a certain level of delivery from that government. They're not prepared to make their own sacrifices in the opposite direction.
I'm not absolutely convinced that's true. I mean, you know, there's always there traditionally has been a reservoir of good feeling and a sense of civic participation that I want to do the right thing. I want to be a party to something larger than myself and my family and my street. I want to contribute to the greater good. But there's been so much that has sapped that energy from the 60s onward between the blowback on the civil rights revolution, the war in Vietnam, the economic malaise that the country slid into in the late 2000s. So much of that drains that energy and that enthusiasm away that it's up to a president to reignite it, but the realization must sink in somewhere along the way that that's not enough to just say it. You have to figure out I mean, you know, I joke sometimes. I say I want to run a national campaign in this country to change the national anthem from "What You Have" to Janis Joplin's "Get It While You Can."
Yeah, that's about right, I think.
But that's been something of an angry national mood in the U.S. for some people too.
Yeah. Do you feel like I know you were a big fan of President Obama's, and as much as you try to be objective about these things, I think a lot of people were. I can count myself in that number as well. I got a message here from somebody who says, "Are you collecting your tears in an Obama mug?"
I haven't started to cry yet. No, crying's for sissies. No, I wrote to somebody this morning. I said, "Well, we got to grit our teeth, dig our fingernails into a piece of strong wood, and just, you know, keep going and remember, there's just 4 more years."
Well, it could be 8, Brooks. Don't count your chickens.
He'll be an old man by then. And, you know, he may well be one of these guys who says, "Okay, well, been there, done that. Time to move on."
Brooks, you've been paying attention to the history of politics in the U.S. for a long time. Were people as apprehensive when Ronald Reagan, a Hollywood actor, was elected president in the 80s? Were they as apprehensive of what he might do, what he might not do, what he might be predicted to be all about?
Well, I mean, let's keep in mind, Reagan was actually the president of a union, you know, Hollywood Screen Actors Guild. Right. So he'd had that experience.
And governor.
Governor of California for 8 years, and California is, among other things, the largest state in the country in population terms. All right, it's not like the full-bore governorship in some states. It's a little bit more of a ceremonial job in some ways. But still, I mean, you know, it's a real job, and you have to pay attention. You have to do things. But most importantly were two other parts of the Reagan phenomena. One was he was pretty clear about what it was he wanted to do. And he had this kind of boundless optimism. You know, the campaign commercial, trying to find the right word there, the one that had the most resonance with people was, "It's morning in America." And that fitted so nicely with his own boundlessly optimistic personality.
Right.
That it gave people the sense that, well, here's somebody who knows what he wants to do. And I may not agree with everything, or I may think he's crazy, but at least he knows his own mind. Now, whether he was paying attention throughout his presidency is a little different. There is the old joke that some things didn't happen on Ronald Reagan's watch. They took place during his naps.
All right, Brooks, listen, there's going to be lots to talk about in the next couple of months. I hope that you are you're as excited as I am about watching Donald Trump as president. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Brooks Spector, everybody, thank you. Brooks Spector is a political commentator and analyst, and someone who we like to refer to every now and then when it comes to American affairs.
And definitely the greatest name of any guest we've ever had.
Someone said, "Is that Sally Spector's brother?" And then someone agreeing with us that's a really good name for a Bond villain, Brooks Spector. So, yeah, and a very smart man who's really been watching U.S. politics for so many years now that nothing surprises him anymore. I do like his suggestion for our national anthem, don't you? Get it while you can. All right, it's 10 away from 8. We're going to be speaking to an amazing South African inventor. You know, we talk a lot about innovation. Everybody's jumping around up and down saying, "Oh, innovation, innovation, innovation." You've got people in suits who've never been so much as tinkering with a hammer and nail in their garage, telling us all about how we should innovate.
But it's the buzzword
now. Yeah, people stand up in front of crowds of people and go, "You know, you've got to be innovative." And you think, well, what are you doing? You're saying what everybody else is saying. That's the least innovative thing in the world. This guy actually is living that life. He's invented things that have changed the way that people live their lives, the way that they keep their pool working, the way that it's amazing to see how someone can have an idea and then make it come into fruition as a device.
Mm.
It takes a special kind of person to translate ideas into actual objects.
It's fascinating, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, his name is Carl Super. We'll speak to him just now about his inventions. And we will take your calls on Skype, Cliff Central, one word. We seem to have that up and working again. You can message us too on, among other things, WhatsApp 0797482090. You can send us a message on WeChat. You could tweet us at cliffcentral.com, whichever you prefer. Sex Talk today. They're talking about illegal abortions on Sex Talk, and they're going to be talking about education around that. Yvonne says, everybody have a good day today. It's Friday. Woohoo! That's a good point. Yep. Even Madonna on Celebration wrote a song about Mabali. I'm not sure which song it was.
Get it started, it's a celebration.
No, I can't. So yeah, please don't sing.
I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, where's Mabali?
Let's take a break and play the Madonna song with Mabali's, again, constant influence in pop culture.
Wow.
And then Zandi says, that guy who called from London was very close to telling Sia to shut up because I didn't call to talk to you, I called to talk to Garrett.
Wow.
That's from Zandi.
Wow.
Tracy Morgan was apparently pictured recently at KFC in Cape Town eating a streetwise pup. Check on Facebook. That's from Obakeng. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting messages coming in this morning. People is busy. Do you want to hear more?
Yeah.
Hey, where's Matumane? Was yes. here yesterday. Yeah. Wes is like a celebrity now.
Oh, he's the real deal. You know, he's been posting these very cool clips of all the different voiceover work that he does. And a lot of people are just shocked at his skill and ability. So he's kind of the cool kid right now.
Everybody wants to be Wes. Ben. Ankia says, I'm listening to you guys talking. My son's golf lessons include dress code and golf etiquette courses.
See, look at that. Rounded education from a young age. This is where you went wrong, Gareth. You should have embraced golf. Anki is giving her child the greatest upbringing known to man.
I want to be able to call in and interrupt anything, including Ben's sport. Is that a possibility? Yes, it is. It totally is. That's a question someone asked.
Why including my sport? It's just any other feature. Just you think I'm going to get angry.
Speaking of surly people, somebody says here, do you think there is any worse job than being in a toll booth on the highway?
Oh,
that's a horrible job. See, I don't mind if those people are surly. You have, 2 seconds of being around them? You don't care. You don't need them to feel good.
Yes.
Mm-mm.
And what a horrible job. Usually those toll booths are in the middle of nowhere.
And you have no one to talk to.
No. You're on your own.
Well, Ben, that would be a great job for you and Mabali, actually. No one to talk to. You're on your own.
No, but every 20 seconds, you've got to take someone's keys or wallets or whatever it is. Sorry, card.
Not at 3 in the morning in the middle of the Karoo.
No, but then you're going to get stabs, yeah? That's just death.
Even security guards are able to speak to colleagues and walk around. Toll booth people can't move. Remember to put your name in. Otherwise, I don't know who's sending the messages because we just get these as a number. All right, and then Greg says, did Dr. Phil at least ask Annie whether she's okay now?
I don't know.
The Annie from the Michael Jackson song. Annie, are you okay? Are you okay? Annie, are you okay now? Dr. Phil Cab says, guys, have I missed something? Where is Michael Flax? Well, see, I saw him over the holidays.
Uh-huh.
And Flax decided to take a little sabbatical. He wants to change his life. He's going through some kind of spiritual enlightenment. And he has spent the last month getting his body back in shape. And he wants to get his mind in place next and then sort out his spirituality. And I said to him, that's great. Do it because, he's 23. But I'm not going to have you do it while we're all busy with the show. So he's off doing that. And he'll come in and give us a report back, next week? I think next week or the week after he'll pop in. And we can have a chat to Flax. So if you're wondering where he is, that's what he's up to at the moment. He's finding himself. All right. Any other questions? I think we're done with those. When we come back in a little while, we'll speak to a proper South African inventor, a guy called Carl Super. We'll find out all about the things he has invented and the things that he still has to invent. Because, you know, when people like that come up with a good idea, it's one of 20 ideas they've had. That's just the one that they can make happen immediately. They manifest these things that we only dream of in real life. They make them turn into actual objects that we use in our daily lives. Amazing. Let's get your day going, shall we? It's Friday. It's Timo ODV.
cliffcentral.com.